is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
All right, hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week.
The album you will be reviewing this week is Behavior by Pet Shop Boys.
All right, so let's see. Here's a description of the album. It says, released in October of 1990, Behavior is the fourth album by British synth-pop duo Pet Shop Boys. Often regarded as their most introspective and mature work, the album marked a shift from the high-energy dance-pop of their earlier records to a more subdued, melodic, and reflective sound. Produced in collaboration with Harold Faltermeyer, Behavior is characterized by warm analog synthesizers and lush orchestration, which complement the melancholic and thoughtful lyrical themes. Tracks like Being Boring, a nostalgic meditation on youth and loss, and This Must Be the Place I Waited Years to Leave, a tale of regret and disillusionment, exemplify the album's emotional depth. Despite its more restrained tone, the record still features infectious moments of pop brilliance, such as So Hard and Jealousy. Critically acclaimed for its sophisticated songwriting and emotional resonance, Behavior has grown in stature over the years and is often cited by fans and critics alike as one of Pet Shop Boys' finest and most enduring works. Okay, so yeah, so the album was released on the 22nd of October 1990, and the genres are synth pop and dance pop, and was released on Parlophone Records, and was produced by the Pet Shop Boys and Harold Faltermeyer. And this was right when the CDs were getting popular, so there's doesn't really list what's on side one and side two. But there's 10 songs on the album, so halfway through the album, what we like to do is we have a discussion at that point. And so if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, the album starts with the song Being Boring, and the first half, so track 5, will be Only the Wind. So if you want to stop at that point, and we'll have a discussion at that point in the album, and we've linked the album in the show notes to both Spotify and Apple Music, so you can get the album on your preferred streaming service. And just want to remind you to check out our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress, and you can get these episodes the day before they go live, and you can get a shout out during these episodes, and even pick an album for us to review. So that's pretty cool stuff there. But without further ado, here is the first song on the album called Being Boring. So here we go. Okay, and ending the first half of the album, or side one, with Only the Wind. I'm enjoying this. I like that it's a little darker than the other Pet Shop Boys album that we did.
Yeah, I guess it is. I mean, this isn't really something that I generally would listen to, but it's definitely a creative one. I kind of like what they're doing with sounds that I normally wouldn't go for.
Yeah, because I think that, well, I agree, and I that's my perspective as well, because I think, you know, we're the sounds that you hear, the sounds like this that you hear that you're not a fan of, are that's sort of like the watered down version, the pop sort of commercial version, just like I would say in a rock setting, the guitar, some of the guitar tones on like hair metal are like, it's not really my thing, but I love guitar. It's the same sort of thing here. It's like, oh, this is actually cool. They're doing something interesting with these synth sounds that I'd never really explored before, because the stuff that I heard was, you know, the more commercial stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is actually, from what I've heard so far, it's a very creative take on all of that, like I was saying. And yeah, I think you sort of illustrated it pretty well. Yeah, those guitar sounds, again, not the tone I would ever pick, but it works in this setting. It's sort of its time. Actually, it seems a little after its time. It's a lot of it seems very 80s, but this is 1990. So, I don't know, maybe it's just because it's the Pet Shop Boys and that's kind of what they did.
Well, and I think the Pet Shop Boys were one of those groups that, like, yes, they are doing like synth pop or whatever. And it was as much as it was popular at the time, they're not ones to follow trends. They're sort of doing their own thing. And sometimes it catches on and they have a big hit, and sometimes it's, you know, it yeah. kind of flies under the radar. But regardless, they're not really concerned about having a big hit. They might want a big hit, but they're not chasing it.
Yeah, it's not something that they're willing to, like, compromise themselves with.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and the one thing that got me is I can't remember which song it was, but it had that gated reverb drum sound. But I thought, you know what, with the synthesizers and it's like an electronic sort of thing, it kind of fits.
Yeah, exactly. That I think that was how can you expect me to be taken seriously?
Yeah. And I think I realized that's not necessarily a bad sound. But because it was so overused in the 80s, they tried to force this synthetic drum sound into the other instruments that were like more organic, like guitars and bass and whatever. It's all about the context, I think.
Yeah, I think it's got a lot to do with context. And speaking of context, we're now like 40 years, well, 35 after this album was released. Which I think would help this thing. I think that if this was 1990 and I was listening to this, I would probably think that this was, oh my God, why are you still trying to do this 80s thing? I want to get away from it. But that I'm listening to it and I'm not surrounded with that, I can appreciate it for what it is. So for my personal appreciation of it, it has to be taken out of the context of the time that it was even released in.
Yeah. And I think honestly, that's why, like, this album actually didn't perform very well commercially. It was critically well received, but commercially at the time, it wasn't a big hit with audiences. And I think that might be why. It's like people were just kind of a little tired of the sound. It's like, okay, we've heard this. Can you do something new? Like,
yeah, I think people really wanted to get back to, you know, sounds that were a little more rootsy, a little more human again. And synth pop just wasn't that. Sure, there was other pop that was coming out at the same time that wasn't that, but it catered to a different, this is too sophisticated for that. It wasn't catering to the, you know, the pop audience to the same degree. It's a little too introspective. It's not party music.
Exactly. And I think up until this point, people were expecting the party stuff from the Pet Shop Boys.
Well, sort of, except I've come to realize that they just were a little bit more sophisticated than the stuff that they were lauded in against. I guess their sound just worked for them in the 80s, and by the time the 90s is rolling around, it just wasn't working for them the same way. Not in a commercial sense, anyway.
Not in a commercial sense. Yeah, and I think they recognized that. I mean, I think I was just reading about... he said Neil Tennant has said that the Pet Shop Boys quote-unquote imperial phase ended in September 1988 when their new single Domino Dancing entered the UK singles chart at number 9 and only reached number 7. So I had to look up what does imperial phase mean, and this is actually a term that he coined. It says, the imperial phase is the period in which a musical artist is regarded to be at their commercial and creative peak simultaneously. The phrase was coined by Neil Tennant of the Pet Shop Boys to describe the group's feelings on their career circa Domino Dancing. So I think he's saying that in retrospect. He's not saying it, you know, at the time, you know, this is our creative peak and, you know, we're just going to. But he's saying, like, in retrospect, yeah, when that single came out and it only reached number 7 when we were used to having number 1s, it's like, oh, okay, so we've peaked, we maybe hit our commercial peak, and now we can maybe be a little more creative, and we don't have to worry about having a hit, because maybe we'll have a hit, but maybe we won't. And I think maybe that was a bit of a relief.
Sometimes, for some artists, I think it is a bit of a relief to take some of the pressure off.
I've heard Paul McCartney talk about the Beatles when I can't remember which single, but one of their singles didn't reach number 1. And it was like, okay, all right. Okay, so it was like, okay, this momentum had been, and like the pressure of trying to get a number 1 hit, it's like, oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, I mean... Even for a band like the Beatles can only be number 1 for so long. And they managed to stretch it really far.
They did.
I mean, they did almost a whole decade.
And I don't think any other artist has had that run of number 1 singles. Most artists go through like peaks and valleys.
There's been bands that have lasted longer. There's been bands that have come along that might have been... Oh, I don't know. More popular? I don't know. That one's a little tough to judge. But yeah, I can imagine the relief come when the other... And for them, that was basically their hit was only hitting number 2. That's still pretty high.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's still selling like a million copies, but yeah. For this, like, I think like you said, they're being more creative. They're taking more risks. With their music. I mean, some of the first song is almost 7 minutes. That's definitely not a commercial thing to do.
No, and yet it was one of the singles. I'm sure it was kind of truncated a bit for the single.
Yeah, it's I'm not hearing, if I were the record company, I don't know if I would would know what to do with this. Yeah, I think it's a little it's interesting to hear like synth pop that is more introspective. I'm not quite used to. I'm used to like like singer songwriter rootsy kind of music being introspective, but. To put it in the context of, it's a really interesting, and I don't know how often it's done, but it is very interesting. It's sort of like counterpoint.
And yet it works.
It works, absolutely. It's that contrast.
Yeah, juxtaposition.
But, you know, at the time the album came out, like it actually, I'm saying that they lost like some... creativity or something, but I think, you know, at the time it didn't receive bad reviews, but it didn't receive like glowing reviews either. It was like, yeah, this is a good album, but it was only in retrospect that people realized, oh, this is actually some of their best work.
Yeah, that sometimes happens, but yeah, this album seems a little out of time, and I think that did harm it on the charts. Like I said, it's a very creative album. It's I guess probably one of their most introspective, and yet it's still the synth pop sound, which was as I was saying, a little out of vogue by the time the album came out. It was, this is getting into the era of grunge.
Well, yeah, that's true too. Like this is in 1990. So like actually the Black Crowes released their first album earlier this year. And that was, I think that was a big hit. It sold like 5 million copies.
Yeah, I think people were just ready for something a little bit more organic. And even in Britain, where they love their pop music and stuff like that, and they still do, but it was, it wasn't quite like Oasis were still a couple of years away from putting out their first album, but that was kind of the direction things were going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even in Britain.
Yeah. Cause you had like bands like the Stone Roses who were coming up and, yeah. So yeah, the Pet Shop Boys popularity had kind of, well, like they recognized that it had peaked, but, I did manage to find a few interesting facts about the album. So it is a change in sound. It says, unlike their previous albums, which leaned heavily into digital production, Behavior was recorded using analog synthesizers and vintage equipment.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, the duo deliberately chose this more organic sound, working with producer Harald Faltermeyer, famous for Axel F, in Munich to achieve a warmer, more melancholic tone.
I can hear that.
Yeah, I can hear it too. And it says being boring was inspired by a Zelda Fitzgerald quote. The album's opening track and fan favorite Being Boring was partly inspired by a quote attributed to Zelda Fitzgerald. The quote is, she refused to be bored chiefly because she wasn't boring. The song reflects on youth, friendship, and the impact of the AIDS crisis, making it one of their most personal and poignant songs. So yes, like we discussed, the album was a commercial underdog, but a critical darling. While Behavior didn't match the commercial success of earlier albums like Actually or Introspective, it has since gained a reputation as one of the duo's most artistically accomplished works. Many longtime fans and critics consider it their best and most emotionally resonant album. Yeah, it's for a lot of the time I find that like more synth-based music, it is often harder to convey emotion because it is so very, like, you use a drum machine and it's very like robotic and everything is timed perfectly and everything's in tune perfectly. And it's very hard. And sometimes the point is to take all emotion out of it and make it sound like a machine. For them to have the ability to make this electronic music, but to still have it convey emotion is very, very tricky to do.
Yeah. Well, it definitely has to rely a lot more on like the voice and the lyrics and stuff like that. But the fact that they're using vintage equipment does help, because the vintage equipment itself, maybe not so much when it was new, because when it came out originally, it probably sounded very, very avant-garde and new and polished and everything like that. But after years, the sound sounds almost degraded. Even by 1990, this is the equipment's probably only at most 20 years old, but likely 15 years old or something like that, if we're talking about mid-70s Moog synthesizers or something like that. I don't know exactly what they used. But there's a degradation in the sound, and, you know, I've talked about it as far as, like, Vaporwave and stuff like that kind of uses it to its advantage in that sense, too. Where when a tape degrades after each time you use it? Generation loss. And that adds a little bit more personality back to it. It's like, and just like a human is flawed, the technology by this point is also flawed. And that's when it sort of becomes personal again, and that's what I kind of like about it. This still manages to sound kind of polished, but again, it's very creatively done, and the fact that they did use this, you know, vintage equipment and stuff like that, just to try and, they were kind of going in the right direction, but it wasn't quite what everybody was expecting. Like, everybody wanted that back to roots sort of thing, but the Pet Shop Boys version of doing that was going to vintage equipment, and I don't think vintage, like, synthesizers and stuff like that, and I think people were ready for the standard guitar band sort of format more so than that, and this would come along another, well, it's kind of popular now, but even as let's say around the 2010s or something like that, where synth pop was sort of coming back into favor, but it was, again, they used a little bit more of a personal approach as opposed to a polished approach.
And, you know, for the Pet Shop Boys, like, they're still together and they're still releasing albums and they never stopped. So, like, I think the follow-up to this album and every album that they've done, they've stayed with the synth pop sound. That's their thing. And kudos to them for sticking with it. It's like, no, this is the kind of music that we want to make. Because a lot of bands, when talking about rock bands, a lot of rock bands, when the 90s happened and grunge happened, a lot of the 80s band tried to hop on that trend. I think Motley Crue and a couple of others tried to go, like, they let their hair down and wore, like, cut off or not, like, jeans with holes in them and tried to have, like, a bit of a harder sound. And, like, the fans of that music, they didn't like that music because of the aesthetic. They like that music because of the authenticity. And the bands that tried to chase the aesthetic, the fans saw right through it.
It wasn't authentic. The authenticity is what sold it, and if you're not being authentic trying to change yourself into that image, you're missing the entire point.
Exactly. So the fact that the Pet Shop Boys stayed with the synth pop even when it wasn't popular means that they were sticking true to themselves and they weren't trying to be somebody that they're not.
Yeah, exactly. And I respect that.
Absolutely.
Even if it wasn't something that I would have gravitated to, I respect, again, the authenticity. And yeah. Exactly. It's a shame it didn't find its audience at that time. Well, I guess that there was a small audience and you know, people who appreciated the band before, who are hardcore fans, probably still followed them and still do, probably. The fact that they just kept going until, you know, they come full circle and this sort of stuff became popular again. Sometimes it just pays off to do that, like not to give up. And in the sea of otherness, they didn't give up.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. They never faltered from who they were, and they're secure enough to know it's like, okay, this, you know, we know who we are and we know not limitations, but we know what we want to do. So the next one is Jealousy, the song Jealousy, which is the, I think it's the closing, yeah, it's the closing track. It's one of their earliest songs. Says the album's closing track, Jealousy, was actually one of the first songs Neil Tennant and Chris Lowe wrote together back in the early 1980s. They held it back for years, believing it deserved the right context. Behavior finally gave it the sophisticated platform it needed. Interesting. I'm looking forward to that one. And this number five, it says there are subtle political undertones. Though not overtly political, Behavior Though not overtly political, Behavior subtly explores themes of control, conformity, and disillusionment. Songs like This Must Be the Place I Waited Years to Leave reflect Tennant's experiences in British public school and convey a broader critique of societal expectations and personal repression. He wasn't out at the time. I think a few years later he did come out and reveal that he was gay. So I think there was maybe some listening to that song with that context, there sort of the fear of people not finding that out about him, because in those days you would get beaten up for it and maybe worse. So interesting. And it's interesting that I know Pink Floyd explored it on The Wall, of like how bad was the British public school system.
It could probably be pretty bad at times, but it could be bad pretty much anywhere, but there's a certain enforced conformity in the British, to like the fact that everybody winds up in these uniforms. And I sort of get the idea of, well, if it's there's some arguments that people, put forward for, uniforms and stuff like that. But more than just the uniforms, there's this almost militant, it's like military school in a lot of ways. And I think there's a lot of individuality that's not really encouraged.
Yeah, and there's a lot of expectations.
Yeah, exactly. And going back, well, good grief. Certainly as far back as the 60s and 70s, you hear lots of music about from British artists who, complain bitterly about their days in school and couldn't wait to get out of it to, be themselves. That's maybe partly why the art schools were so popular with musicians and stuff like that when they got out of it. Because they were just desperate enough to explore creativity. Just being creative. There's so many musicians that were in art school and design school and stuff like that. They just wanted to create and be different and,
No, I know what you mean. Just to break out of that system.
Monotony
and grasp on to anything that is creative and is going to let them explore something that they otherwise might not have been able to.
Exactly.
I can't even imagine our school system is a little bit like that, but not quite to that extent.
Oh no, it's not to that extent. It's a far more severe atmosphere. The British school systems are, they certainly used to be, I don't know what they are now to the same, but I know they still have the uniforms and stuff like that. But I don't know if it's as severe as it was, but it certainly was very severe. It was like leftover from the Victorian age of Victorian age, you are expected to conform in a very severe way. Just in society, and the school systems just sort of held on to that with an iron fist for as long as they possibly could. But so that's basically the story behind that. So to my best understanding.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
And I guess we'll get into the second side of the album though. But before we do that, let's hear from our friends over at the Six Picks Music Club. So check those guys out.
Hey there, I'm Dave, and I host Six Picks Music Club with my two buddies, Jeffro and Russ. We talk about six songs on a playlist that meet a theme to a topic that we've already decided on.
Just real quick, do you meet themes? Do you meet them?
Okay, no, I don't know. I guess What's the...
Russ, could I get a ruling on the verbal phrase, meet the theme?
Jeff, I don't know. I'm not fluent in the spoken word.
People just don't say meet the theme. They say fit a theme. And every week we talk about six songs that fit a theme.
All right. Okay, fit a theme.
Guys, we're going to have to re-record this.
Ah, fuck my dick.
Okay, and Dave, don't forget, it's Six Picks Music Club.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
All right, and ending the album with Jealousy. Yeah, I think this is a pretty solid album overall. I like the synthetic sound, and I like that they didn't just go with one sound for every song, that it... The album works as a whole, but each song has its own... They're making very deliberate choices for each song. It doesn't have a consistent, but
there's not one sound that like carries itself through every single song to the point of monotony anyway.
Right, exactly. Yeah, every song is interesting in its own way, and I really appreciate that about it, that they took the time to care for each song individually. Yeah. And but have it also work as a full, you know.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, I don't know what else to add. It's more of the same, but in the best kind of way. It's consistently I can't say there's anything, you know, that I don't have any complaints or anything really. There's not actually a bad song. It's a pretty solid album, even if it's not something that I generally would like run to or something polite. But I've really come to appreciate this sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I appreciate the effort that goes into it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, because you can tell that they really sort of labored over it and worked hard to get get this album sounding the way they wanted it to sound. Yeah, and I also like that this album in particular, there was a blend of like some of the orchestral instruments. You could tell like the trumpets and some of the strings were real trumpets and strings. You know, there is a certain sound on a keyboard when you on certain keyboards. You select the trumpet sound, and it just doesn't sound like trumpets. It, for whatever reason, it just does not sound like trumpets.
Yeah. Well, I noticed, like, in the last song, I'm pretty sure that was actually a synth trumpet sound, but it didn't sound out of place on it.
I could be wrong, but there are some... Yeah, I think you're right. I think that is a synth trumpet.
But it didn't sound out of place or anything like that. I think that was. It doesn't sound cheesy.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas it can sound cheesy, but it didn't sound cheesy here. It's. I don't know whether it's just because it's in the context of synth music.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have too much else to add either. I enjoyed it. So, like, what would be your three favorite songs on the album, or three highlights? Yes.
Huh. Sort of tough. This Must Be the Place I Waited Years to Leave. I think that one's a pretty good one. I'm gonna go with Nervously and Jealousy as well.
Yeah, I think two of those would be mine. I think I would go with Yeah, This Must Be the Place I Waited Years to Leave and Jealousy. Those were two ones. I think my other one would be How Do You Expect to Be Taken Seriously? Or How Can You Expect to Be Taken Seriously? I like that they went for more, not a totally rock sound, but more of a rock sound in that. They sort of experimented with that.
Yeah, I was also considering My October Symphony. I thought that was a really good one, too.
That was a good song, yeah. Yeah, there really isn't a bad one here, to be honest.
Not really. No, it's pretty consistent.
So I guess that brings us to the question is, would you listen to this album again?
It's not something I would, like, search out, but I think if it came up, I'd probably put it on again, yeah.
Yeah, I would too. I think, I think the album, I would listen to it again. It's one of those albums that I think this kind of sound has definitely grown on me, and I'm getting more comfortable with it and becoming more of a fan than I maybe previously was. So
yeah, that's a good way to say it, and becoming more comfortable with it. It's I still prefer it when it's, you know, when there's a degradation to it for some reason, but this works pretty well. I can appreciate it for what it is. Absolutely.
I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. Be sure to check out polyphonicpress.com. You can get all these previous episodes and latest updates and everything like that. And if this is your first time listening, be sure to give us a follow and you leave us a rating and review wherever you're listening, because it really helps people discover the show. And you can check out the Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. And I guess that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.